Hello. This is episode one of the 3-year Nobel Prize Reading Challenge podcast, as part of the podcast called Blood and Rain. I'm your host, Arthur Dane. Having no facility for speech making, and no command of oratory nor any domination of rhetoric, I wish to thank the administrators of this generosity of Alfred Nobel for this prize. No writer who knows the great writers who did not receive the prize can accept it other than with humility. There is no need to list these writers. Everyone here may make his own list according to his knowledge and his conscience. It would be impossible for me to ask the ambassador of my country to read a speech in which a writer said all the things which were in his heart. Things may not be immediately discernible in what a man writes, and in this sometimes he is fortunate, but eventually they are quite clear. And by these and the degree of alchemy that he possesses, he will endure or be forgotten. Writing at its best is a lonely life. Organizations for writers palliate the writer's loneliness, but I doubt if they improve his writing. He grows in public stature as he sheds his loneliness, and often his work deteriorates. For he does his work alone, and if he is a good enough writer, he must face eternity, or the lack of it, each day. For a true writer, each book should be a new beginning where he tries again for something that is beyond attainment. He should always try for something that has never been done or that others have tried and failed. Then, sometimes, with great luck, he will succeed. How simple the writing of literature would be if it were only necessary to write in another way what has been well written. It is because we've had such great writers in the past that a writer is driven far out past where he can go, out to where no one can help him. I have spoken too long for a writer. A writer should write what he has to say, and not speak it. Again, I thank you. That was the Nobel Prize in Literature acceptance speech from 1954 by none other than Ernest Hemingway. So, on July 14th, Bastille Day of this year, I put myself on a 3-year course to become champion. Become world champion. Fighter. World champion in kickboxing. Because my two goals in life started when I was 15 years old. My high school Bible class, they had a project asking us what we wanted our life's work to be. And at the time, I had to think long and hard on that. When I really honed in what it was that I wanted to achieve skill mastery in two pursuits. I had recently been taught how to write and love to write by my then English teacher my sophomore year. The other pursuit that I had begun was track and field. I was supposed to be a quarterback. For those of you who are not in the United States, quarterback in American football is the play caller for the offense in American football. He calls the plays, or rather, he's basically the general on the field who throws the ball to a receiver or a tight end, or hands it off to a running back, or runs himself. And I was very good at playing quarterback in middle school, but when I got to high school, I couldn't play quarterback with the people around me. I didn't want to. I was not a social fit. I was not prepared for a massive culture shock socially. And I gravitated towards track and field. I didn't completely love it, but I loved the fact that it was an individual sport. It wasn't going to be down to anyone but myself. The only person I could blame was myself. So, I wanted to achieve skill mastery. So I wrote on this project that I wanted to be a Nobel Prize winner in literature and Olympic gold medalist in track and field. At this high school where I was very much a misfit, I spent a lot of time alone writing, and my writing truly began to flourish. But having left that high school, I transferred to another high school where track and field was out of the question because the section did not allow anyone who transferred as a junior to compete in varsity athletics for a year due to recruitment policies. Apparently some schools had been throwing money to families under the table to get them to transfer for the sake of athletics. And being such a misfit in my previous high school, my mother asked me to audition for the school play because up until high school, I had been an actor my entire life. She wanted me to make new friends, and she thought it was a good way to do it. She wanted me to have a much better experience while I did it. And I was very good at it. And I grew to be very popular, and I started dating girls. And I started spending less and less time alone. And because of this, my writing began to suffer. Now I can write from a healthier place, but I still spend half the time creating by, as Hemingway said, sitting at the typewriter and bleeding. And when I started writing my sophomore year, I had quite a bit to bleed. And due to this new high school and this new environment, I never really felt the need to bleed. I never really felt the need to create too much because all of my creative outlet was going into acting. And one summer, my parents confronted me before my senior year of high school, and they asked me what I was going to do for college, what I was going to do for my major, and I said writing and business, and they said, "We don't see you writing very much," and they were right. And to get my parents off my back, to be quite honest, they kept saying, "We notice you're spending all your time acting, you know, and you're getting very good at it." And to get them off my back, I said, "Fine, I'll be an actor." And my parents weren't exactly convinced that I wanted to do acting as a profession, and they were right, to be honest. But again, since that's what I was good at the time, I doubled down on it, falsely, and I took the flower pot from our kitchen table and slammed it on the floor. My father saw it as a sign that I was going in the right direction, and he was right, maybe in the sense of being fully awake and fully present and passionate, but it was born in falsehood. So I auditioned for London drama schools. And I wound up going to drama school in London, as many of you know. And I needed to do something physical again. I needed a contrast because everything I was doing every day had to do with art. Whether it was movement class, voice class, singing class, script study. Everything I had to do had to do with art, even if it was very regimented in structure. So I actually needed something physical. Something very, very physical and athletic, and I always wanted to do some kind of fighting. When I was 7, I saw Mike Tyson fights and Fernando Vargas fights with my father, and then I saw a little documentary of little inner city kids from Los Angeles boxing, and I really wanted to do that. And I asked my mom, "Could I box?" And she screamed no. And with what little student loan money I had, I walked into what turned out to be the best Muay Thai gym in England. I threw 2 punches and a kick for the first time and knew that I wanted to do Muay Thai for the rest of my life. And a few days after that, I found my individual sport, but I was in drama school. and due to events that I will not disclose, I had to leave. And while I was very good at acting, acting was something that I viscerally knew wasn't supposed to be the main thing. Not at all. And I started to majorly ask myself what I wanted. And if you've listened to the very first episode of this podcast, you'll know Blood and Rain is sort of the declaration of the path that materialized at my first Orthodox Easter. We call it Pascha. But it took a while to get there, and it took a while to realize what I wanted. And it honed down to that duality. I needed something creative. I needed something physical. And I spent a lot of time alone, meditating, and really trying to remove myself from the expectations of others and what was conventional. And it came down to two things. I wanted to be an all-time great fighter and an all-time great writer. I'm moving to Thailand and will live there and train 6 days a week for 8 hours and meditate and pray and shadowbox on the seventh day. And truly live martially, the way I've always wanted to live, without signing a contract for questionable endeavors of the U.S. military. I'll be crowned on Bastille Day weekend in Paris. I've seen it. That will be on the road towards becoming a world champion. Rather, an all-time great champion. That is the path I'm on now. But I started to think about the other goal. Started to think about the Nobel Prize goal. And while I'm studying all the great fighters right now, Samat, who I recently trained with, Rob Kamen, Sugar Ray Robinson, Georges St. Pierre, Valentina Shevchenko, Rico Verhoeven, Badr Hari, Diesel Noy, Samrat Kamsing, Mike Tyson, so on and so forth. And I must mention the late, great, marvelous Marvin Hagler. I'm not studying enough of the great writers. There are many writers that I've looked up to. Leo Tolstoy, Henry David Thoreau, Hemingway, of course, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kenzaburo Oe, and so on and so forth. I realize that I haven't read very many of the writers who were awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. So, I decided at the same time to start the Nobel Prize Reading Challenge. Many of you have started the challenge with me, which I appreciate. And I've been wanting to release this podcast detailing the challenge for some time. It's to read one work of every Nobel Prize winner in literature within 3 years. That would be one work every 10 days per author. The order is randomly generated, with a few exceptions.
The very last person on the reading list will be the first who was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature by the name of Sully Prudhomme. And the reason for this is that Sully Prudhomme has no accurate translations in English. All of his writing remains in French. So in order to complete the challenge, one needs to be fluent enough in French to effectively read French. The penultimate is Ernest Hemingway, and the reason I will reveal why the penultimate is Hemingway won't be revealed until I am champion in 3 years' time. The first five randomly generated in this order with the aforementioned exclusions were the following: Bjornsoner Bjornsson, William Faulkner, Eugenio Montale, Seamus Heaney, and Sinclair Lewis. We are now on the next block of five: Czesław Miłosz, Pearl Buck, Luigi Pirandello, John Galsworthy, and Winston Churchill. Now, that's not to say that you wouldn't be able to catch up on the challenge if you wanted to join. What I mean by that is, the prompt is that you read one work by each and every one of these writers, in 10 days for the next 3 years. Now, some of these writers, for example, some of these winners, like Bob Dylan, were lyricists. Many of these writers were poets. Not all of these writers were novelists. So, if you know for the next 10 days, let's say, so today is September 15th, and Czesław Miłosz is the writer for this block, and you know within the next 10 days you're going to have quite a busy schedule, instead of picking one of his novels, you could pick a short story, you could pick some poetry, you could pick some essays. The goal is just to read one work by every single one of these writers in the next 3 years. Now, obviously, there's going to be a winner for this year, the next, and the one after that. So there's going to be three added to the list, which would total to 120. So, with the previous five before this reading block of Czesław Miłosz for the next 10 days, you could read a play by Bjornsoner Bjornsson. I chose a play titled The King, which will be the next episode of this sub-podcast within this podcast. You can read a short story by Faulkner. You can read a handful of poetry by Eugenio Montale, one of his smaller poetry collections. I opted for Beowulf, Seamus Heaney's translation of Beowulf for my selection of his. And then I went with a full-length novel for Sinclair Lewis. I read Aerosmith. It's a fantastic novel. But I did that in accordance with the nature of my schedule for each of those respective 10-day blocks. So while you're reading Czesław Miłosz, if you wanted to catch up immediately, you could read something smaller from each of those previous five authors. Or you can be very disciplined with your schedule and read some small works and read some of the longer works parallel with whatever the current reading block is. For example, I could read Aerosmith again while I read Rescue by Czesław Miłosz. The purpose of this challenge is, I mean, for me personally, obviously, it's to know the greats and have better respect for this prize that I seek to win and will win someday. But it's not to say that these are the only writers worthwhile reading. In the history of the Nobel Prize, it's a very short history. The first awarded was, once again, Sully Prudhomme in 1901. And there are many writers who came and went before the prize was beginning to be awarded. Robert Louis Stevenson, Henry David Thoreau, William Shakespeare for that matter, Calderon, so on and so forth. And during the duration, the ongoing duration of the prizes awarding, there have been many writers who have been questionably left off the rich history and list of Nobel literature laureates. Writers like F. Scott Fitzgerald, Langston Hughes, Marcus Garvey, Cormac McCarthy, Frank Herbert, so on and so forth. That being said, for those of you who join me in this challenge, I would hope that it has mostly to do with being. I've spoken about this in writing quite a bit, that specifically when it has to do with training, whether that be weightlifting, martial arts, endurance training, that you shouldn't just seek to do the act. You shouldn't just seek to complete the training. There are certain things that require more attention and presence for the results to matter. This is a sliding scale, for example, with bodybuilding. You need to focus on the muscle to grow. You need to alter your mind to focus on the contraction of the muscles, squeezing every last bit of tension into it in a certain given period of time while it's worthwhile. And other things, like the Soviet weightlifting system, while you need quite a bit of attention to form when lifting these weights, since you're relying on the central nervous system, it has less to do with the muscle spindles themselves. So there's a sliding scale involved. But I write about quite a bit that not only should you seek to complete the training, should you even seek to achieve the goals, and we'll use the same example once again for bodybuilding, the goal to be as big and as lean as possible and as aesthetic as possible. Soviet weightlifting system would be as strong as possible. For martial arts, it would be achieving skill mastery in that given martial art, and then beyond that, pushing the boundaries, going on the frontier of new techniques and new concepts and new movement patterns that many have given prime examples of doing so. But you should also seek to be changed. You should also seek that on the other side of this training, not only did I do the training, my being has changed for the better. I'm a better man. I'm a better woman for the female listeners. I should say that this thing changed me. This thing changed my life. Now, that's also a sliding scale. Smaller habits can accumulate and change your life over time. And certain moments with certain people or in certain places can change your life as well. But when you go through a good story, or you read a great work with impeccably written prose or argument or poetry or drama, it should leave you feeling changed. It should leave you feeling as if your perspective has been torn so it can grow further. There are many escapes in this life. I've seen many alcoholics in my time as a bartender. I've known many drug addicts. I've known people who were addicted to video games, and obviously I know many a man who had to shake the porn addiction. I've seen people tell their wives they're going to quit smoking and they just can't quite shake it. And I've seen people escape in the smallest things, just so they wouldn't have to face life. Reading can be abused. We can read to get away from our problems, and maybe there's a certain smaller dose of that that's healthy. But reading done correctly is not an escape from real life. And it's an enhancement, and it's an amplification of real life. Oftentimes, art is a mirror, whether that's in cinema, television, music, or literature. And it always seems to hit at the right time. It always seems to give you just the reflection you need, whether it's the entire reflection or just a part of yourself, a certain aspect of yourself that became a blind spot for a little bit that needed to be face to face with where you're at this given moment in our three-dimensional concept of time. So I hope you join me on this journey of reading. I hope you join me on this journey of growth, the expansion of our perspectives, the expansion of our vocabulary. Our greatest extents for empathy and to counterbalance that strength. And if you do join me, do let me know. I'll be happy to add you to the Nobel Prize Reading Challenge group chat on Telegram, where we'll be further discussing the works we've chosen, how they've impacted us, and if there's any changes we're making to our lives from perspectives and ideas that we've read on paper. Thank you so much for listening, folks. I truly look forward to the next 3 years. Me personally, it's going to be the most painful, physically, the most trying, the most directly high-pressure time of my life. It's my road to being champion. And that requires everything. Absolutely every last thing. Champions don't make excuses about how they had to spend time with their family. They spend time with their family. And they train. They read to gain perspective. And they train. They help others in need, and they train. They write, and they train. They strengthen other men, and they train, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. This is the ascent, and it starts now. And I'm immensely thankful for all of those, all of you who are listening and sharing this journey with me. It means a great deal. So until next time, good night and good storms. Thank you.